common would you say that eating disorders are? New reports come out from Deloitte Access Economics. It estimates more than 900,000 Australians have struggled with an eating disorder this year. It's nearly a million. And by the end of this year, conditions like anorexia and bulimia and binge eating will have killed 1,800 Australians. That's an extraordinary toll, especially for something that remains largely hidden in our community. It's a personal toll. It's also an economic toll. And according to this report, it's something that we really need to start dealing with. To tell us about it, I'm joined by Christine Morgan, who's the CEO of the Butterfly Foundation, which commissioned the report. Christine, thank you very much for joining us today. The report estimates that eating disorders are costing Australia $70 billion a year. How do you calculate that?
I know, it's an amazing figure, isn't it? Well, look, the starting point with it, Waleed, I think, is to actually look at prevalence, because obviously the end dollars are very much driven by the prevalence figures. And I think one of the most surprising statistics to most people is that there are, as you just said, over 913,000 Australians who will be suffering from anorexia nervosa, bulimia nervosa, binge eating disorder, or the atypical presentations, which equals to approximately 4% of the population. Now, yes, there is an increase in eating disorders, but I think two other things are happening. I think that the earliest statistics that were used and have been around now for quite some time were, and I find this unbelievable, they were based upon a group of Swiss schoolgirls. And what? That was what was used to determine prevalence in Australia.
I know
I believe it was the best data that they felt they had at the time.
But it's meaningless. I don't care if it's the best.
I know, it is. So I think that, so in light of that, I think that this has been a groundbreaking opportunity. And I don't say that kind of overstating it. I think it really is a groundbreaking opportunity to actually put the line in the sand.
So what sort of... go on.
No, I was going to say, so what we did behind the Deloitte's report is we did put together an expert panel with people who really are across the research in this area. We've taken what Deloitte's regard as conservative estimates. We have, for the first time, looked at the full range of eating disorders. So most people know that anorexia nervosa and possibly bulimia nervosa are psychiatric disorders, but they're not aware that binge eating disorder and the atypical presentations, which we call eating disorders not otherwise specified, are just as severe in their duration and impact as anorexia and bulimia.
Now, I'm interested in the definition of these disorders, and I know for this report I was flicking through it and using DSM-4, and there's a new DSM-5, it's about to come out, it's about to hit the printing presses,
right.
And that redefines some things. And I've seen some criticism, we're going to discuss it on the program tomorrow, but I've seen some criticism around about this desire to pathologise things. And so that if you overeat a bit and you do it, say, you know, more than once or twice, I think it's like if you do it 12 times in 6 months or something, then that becomes a disorder. Is there a danger here of overdiagnosis?
I think that if you took the example you've just given, then there would certainly be a danger. But can I say the reality of what the diagnosis is, particularly for binge eating disorder, because I think there is the risk it will be misunderstood. And I'll start with bulimia nervosa. Bulimia nervosa is where you have very distressed, disassociated, and non-controllable binging behaviour. Think possibly in terms of what drives somebody to self-harm. It is that absolute compulsory kind of build-up. And with bulimia nervosa, you will undertake that uncontrolled binging and you will then immediately seek to compensate it with purging-type behaviours. For somebody with binge eating disorder, they suffer from that first component, which is that very, very distressed, disassociated form of uncontrollable eating without the purging. And just to give an example of it, on our national support line, I myself remember taking a call where somebody rang in and they were so distressed. They could remember going into the binge, I think it was on a Thursday evening. They absolutely had no recall of anything for the next 24, 48 hours.
Wow.
But when they came to, they obviously had eaten everything in the house and in fact gone out and bought further food. It's not a controllable comfort eat
they're,
or overeating.
They're in a different psychological state.
And that is the very reason we use psychiatric diagnostic criteria. It is a very serious disorder.
How much do we know about what causes it?
Look, it's an interesting area of research, and the most up-to-date research is actually in the field of epigenetics, where we're looking at what are the genetic vulnerabilities, what are perhaps the biochemical markers that might be there on our genes, which might be more inflammatory than in other people. And then, as with most mental disorders, there will be significant environmental triggers that will trigger a reaction. So
it sounds like you're painting in broad brush strokes here. I mean, is a lot of this a mystery?
Yeah. Is a lot of it a mystery? I think the answers are still not clear. We'll say that. It is something where there is definitely a genetic vulnerability. I think we can clearly say that.
But we don't know how much that contributes? We don't.
And I think one of the problems we have here in Australia is that we don't even collect data at the moment, let alone have a valid epidemiological survey or study that we can rely on. And one of the recommendations out of this report is that we do just that, that we try and actually get the sort of data and information which will more effectively allow us to try and identify those who may be at risk. Because certainly if we can identify and intervene early in illness and early in episode, then we can significantly reduce the duration and the impact of the illness.
And it's also about the breadth of who it affects. I mean, I think a lot of people listening to this might have in their mind, you know, teenage girls who are perhaps image conscious or something like that. But when you're talking about a million people, it's clearly broader than that.
It is much broader. In fact, within the statistic of the 913 plus thousand of Australians with eating disorder, a third of those are male. And the interesting thing that we're seeing across the spectrum of the eating disorders is that, take anorexia nervosa, which is really seen as being a young girl's illness. Well, interestingly, here in New South Wales, we have hospitalisation of children as young as 7. And in what we call the early onset eating disorders, which is 7, 8 years old through to 12, 13, 25% of those presenting and being hospitalised are boys.
Wow. That would be a surprise to a lot of people, I reckon.
I'm sure it would be, yeah.
Mm. And if we're talking about something really common here and something that can potentially have a devastating impact, and it's also deadly. This is the thing I think a lot of us, I wasn't really switched on to, that it's more deadly on a national scale than the road toll every year, which is amazing. Why then? I mean, there's so much focus on the road toll and they're very expensive advertising campaigns. Why don't we see anything on this?
Well, it's really interesting. Once again, I've been inclined today in particular to call this the hidden disease. A few things happen with eating disorders. Firstly, inherent in their very nature is a desire to keep themselves hidden. They become, in effect, the matrix through which somebody is trying to manage their life. So that person is not wanting to disclose it. And in fact, the statistic is that 23% of people with an eating disorder will proactively seek treatment. So you don't have a lot of presentations, you don't have a loud voice crying out there. But then the other interesting thing happens. It's a psychological, psychiatric disorder, but it has very serious physical impairment. And when you are medically unwell, you enter the system, and you usually enter the system not as somebody suffering from an eating disorder, but rather suffering from the consequences of malnutrition or purging. So you might enter into the hospital system or the health system as somebody with cardiac problems, renal problems, gastrointestinal problems, not somebody with an eating disorder. Likewise, if you are one of those statistics of fatality, then you may not be recorded as somebody with an eating disorder. So we know that the two primary causes of death are either organ failure of some sort because of the irreparable damage done to your body, but also there's an extremely high suicide rate because of the very severe psychological distress. But we fight to have eating disorders entered onto a death certificate as the cause of death.
Yeah, I can imagine. Look, I'm astonished by the state of the research that you were dealing with before. What you described was amazing. So it's good that we've got something going now, that there's a start here. Clearly a long way to go. But Christine, thank you very much for the work and also for speaking to us about it.
Thanks for the opportunity.
Christine Morgan, CEO of the Butterfly Foundation, who commissioned that report. 23 minutes past 7.